afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 26th, 2015. I'm David Hadari. The FBI has arrested the father of the former LAPD officer wanted for the fatal shooting of a man in Pomona. Logan Healy has more.
Henry Solis is wanted by federal authorities for shooting Salome Rodriguez Jr. after an early morning bar fight in Pomona on March 13th. Now, the FBI says Solis called his father in Lancaster soon after the shooting. Witnesses told investigators Victor Solis left the house after the call. The FBI says he drove his son to a bus station in Texas, and his pickup was reportedly seen at a family member's home in El Paso. Victor Solis will be charged with lying to FBI agents during the investigation. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
LA taxpayers foot the bill for many necessary causes, but how much is too much? Sarah Collins has the story.
A city audit has found that police and firefighter work injury costs make up 60% of LA workers' compensation expenses. City Controller Ron Galperin has laid out a plan to trim these costs by millions each year while maintaining worker health and safety. LAPD Assistant Chief Sandy Jo MacArthur says the department is already taking action.
This is money that we can save the city, but most importantly, we can have a healthier workforce.
Galperin said the two departments' costs totaled $141 million, enough to pay the salaries of 2,300 entry-level police officers or firefighters. The city controller has audited several city departments as part of an effort to create transparency. Sarah Collins, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles Metro Board today approved a motion that could ensure affordable housing is built around public transportation. The board directed its staff to look into several ideas, including a $10 million loan fund and setting a goal of building 35% affordable housing on Metro-owned land. The University of Southern California is making revisions to its code of conduct policy. Victor Figueroa tells us why.
According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted on university campuses. In response to the issue, USC Vice Provost for Student Affairs sent an email today about changes to the Student Code of Conduct Policy, known as SCAMPUS. The revisions revolve around Section E, which center on dating, domestic violence, and sexual misconduct. The amendments took effect March 15th. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
The attorney known for standing up for the descendants of Armenian genocide victims made a major donation to USC today. Rania Aniftos has the details.
In a room at USC's Levy Library, there are some 40 boxes filled with documents. They will now be a part of the USC's Shoah Foundation Center for Advanced Genocide Research. The documents, donated by attorney Varkis Vigian, include birth certificates, policy papers, family trees, and photographs of victims from the 1915 Armenian Genocide. The Shoah Foundation director, Stephen Smith, says the collection is important.
It actually details individual family stories, and in particular how those families were murdered during the period of the genocide, 1915 to 17.
The Armenian Genocide, which occurred between 1915 and 1918, led to the murder of about 1.5 million Armenians by the Ottoman Empire. The modern Turkish government does not recognize the event as a genocide. USC Professor Wolf Gruner hopes that the documents will bring more attention to a historical event that often goes unnoticed.
Every kind of engagement with these materials will raise, first of all, awareness, but also knowledge. It will deepen our understanding what actually happened.
The lawsuit against New York Life was brought by Martin Marushian. His daughter was at the Shoah Foundation for today's announcement.
And I think this is a great next step because this means that scholars and anyone around the world hopefully can find these documents, look at the documents, and go beyond just the small Armenian community, but go to the world community.
The documents are available for viewing at USC's Levy Library. Rania Aniftos, Annenberg Radio News.
Authorities announced today that they are offering a $50,000 reward for any information about the driver who hit an 87-year-old woman and drove away. Barbara Summerfield suffered severe injuries when she was struck by an SUV near USC on March 16th. Police say the driver continued around campus after having hit Summerfield. Officials and community members gathered this morning outside Norm's Diner on La Cienega Boulevard to urge city council members to grant the building historical status. Among those who signed the petition was Mad Men creator Matthew Weiner, who said he grew up visiting the diner. He says it served as an inspiration for much of his writing.
In a pre-Starbucks era, this was the coffee shop that you would go to write in. This is where I first wrote down my notes for what would become Mad Men. And part of it was inspired by the fact that it was the vibrations of whatever history had happened in that building.
Norm's opened its La Cienega location in 1957. Since then, the retro building has provided a familial atmosphere for customers, including Norman Charimoff, who's frequented the diner for more than 40 years.
Some of this is over-the-top change, and this is really part of the fight to kind of keep LA affordable.
Norm supporters are circulating a petition to urge the city council to designate it a historical cultural monument that would save it from being demolished. Today marks the grand opening of a new restaurant in Los Angeles by Chef Mark Peel. Peel has been nominated for the James Beard Foundation Award. Ciara Lunga reports.
As if you need another reason to stop by downtown LA's Grand Central Market, besides the 36 eateries and vendors already there, world-renowned chef Mark Peel just opened up a new restaurant in the historic hall. Bombo, celebrating its grand opening today, is a seafood stand offering fresh fish and shellfish dishes, like fish stew, steamed mussels, and curried shrimp. The stand also features a case of fresh fish customers can take home. Bombo comes as a blessing to Peel fans after three of his restaurants, including the famed Campanile, closed between 2011 and 2012. Patrons can check it out between 11 and 6, and maybe in the future can stop there for breakfast as well. Ciara Lunger, Annenberg Radio News.
When you think of farmers' markets, you probably think of fresh fruit and gourmet cheese. But think again. This chef is making waves with his unlikely cuisine.
Stuart Eubanks has never been to the Caribbean, but he's on a mission to bring its diverse flavors to Los Angeles. His company, Who's Hungry Food Solutions, uses Jamaican, Cuban, and Trinidadian cuisines, among others. He says it makes him unique and valuable in the LA food scene.
Most of the restaurants you'll see in LA are Jamaican restaurants. I love the food. It's just, there's a lot of other islands that are getting left out in the process that just have so much flavor that you wouldn't think of.
The rich flavors from spices are very different from the pre-packaged foods Eubanks grew up with. His love for home-cooked flavors came from watching cooking shows.
I started cooking when I was about 8. I used to watch all the shows on PBS. There was like Frugal Gourmet and Galloping Gourmet, Paul Prudhomme and Julia Childs. I used to watch all that on Saturday morning. That's how I got into cooking.
His first food job was at a fast food restaurant. Then, after graduating from the Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School, he went to work for Top Chef winner Michael Voltaggio at the Bazaar in Beverly Hills. His love for Caribbean food was a surprising discovery.
One day I was walking from school and I just walked into a Caribbean place. It was a Jamaican restaurant. When I was about 20, I used to go to this place in Inglewood all the time. It was called Lee's. And I used to go there all the time. And I just really liked the food there. I still go there now.
Then an opportunity struck. He got the chance to help open up and develop the menu for Caribbean restaurant Sunny Spa in Venice. Started by Roy Choi, Eubanks wanted to open up his own business and give his twist on the Caribbean cuisine. It's all about getting people to try unfamiliar foods, like the oxtail.
They look at oxtail on the menu like, no, that's okay. It's kind of hard to describe, but you would say, and I guess the umami flavor, but it's like so much more on top of that, especially with the spices that I use for it. It's not something you would have anywhere else.
The chef says he would like to expand to a small restaurant, but keep the catering business going. You can find Who's Hungry Food Solutions at the Echo Park Farmers Market on Friday evenings and Baldwin Hills Farmers Market on Saturday morning. This is Diana Lee, reporting for Annenberg Radio News.
And if you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Sarah Tiano with today's Root Source.
If someone tells you that you waddle when you walk, it's probably not a compliment.
Waddling, I think of girls walking down the row after a like steamy night out.
It's the noise my overweight aunt makes when she dances to Baby Got Back.
Usually kind of chubby waddle.
Unless you're an amphibious bird, that is.
Like a penguin. It's a waddle with a wiggle, now take a
chance. Do the penguin waddle. Waddle dates back to the late 16th century and means to walk with short steps, swaying from side to side. Or to walk as a duck does.
Waddle. It is when you are a duck and you want to go from point A to point B and you waddle.
Waddle has English roots and most likely evolved as a frequentative or repeated version of the verb to wade, like wading in water, which kind of makes the whole water bird comparison thing make a lot more sense.
American football is receiving heavy scrutiny after the release of a study on concussions and their long-term effects on the brain. This has sparked serious discussions regarding the safety of youth football players, which has led many parents to withdraw their children from participation in the sport. However, youth football lives on, with kids still enrolling. Ben Ebert spoke with some of these parents to hear why they continue to allow their children to play.
It's the first in-person enrollment day of the year for the Pasadena Trojans youth football team. Tables are set up with sign-up sheets waiting to be filled out by young, aspiring football stars. What part of the game does one of these kids enjoy the most?
I get to tackle people, get the ball, and tackle people.
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, is a degenerative brain disease that scientists have linked to concussions. This has led the way in the criticism of football. But football parents Maria Figueroa and Alex Valiz are not buying into the claims.
I feel that can just happen anywhere. I mean, they could be in school playing and it can happen. So, I mean, I don't see why not sign my son for football.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those things that kind of gets picked up by the media and it kind of gets overblown a lot. I've been coaching it since he was 6 years old. I don't see it as rampant as they see it.
Lisa Garrison, the board director of the Pasadena Trojans, also has a child that plays. However, she feels this is something to be taken seriously.
I think that it is real, and we need to do a better job as football leagues in educating parents about what the risks are and the precautions they can take and awareness about what to look for, because I think it's a real possibility for every kid that steps foot on the field.
According to the New York Times, research shows children younger than 12 who suffer head injuries can have poor cognition and longer recovery times. Pasadena Pop Warner president Gabrielle Jones says her 8-year-old child has already suffered 2 concussions, both unrelated to football. While Jones agrees the game is dangerous, she feels the media should not be singling out football.
I do think it's important that we're aware, and so for that I do appreciate the media, so we do have awareness. But I would say that a lot of the concussion scare is directed towards football, and if we're going to educate people who are putting their children in sports, we should be doing it across the board.
According to CNN, CTE has been found in the brains of more than just football players, but also athletes in soccer, wrestling, baseball, rugby, and ice hockey. But it is football that has been in the spotlight, though it has had a surprisingly minimal effect on Pop Warner participation.
We suffered a drop in our enrollment a couple of years ago, but we haven't been so hard hit where we can't field teams.
The NFL is supporting the USA Football Heads Up Initiative, which certifies coaches on how to teach kids to properly wear equipment and safely tackle. Alex Valiz says it is too simple of a process.
We used to have coaches' clinics. Most coaches just kind of breeze through it. They're just like, that, click, 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 click. So they're not really listening. They're not really doing what they're supposed to.
A young man actually lost his life because he was tackling improperly, head down, snapped his neck, paralyzed, and then ended up passing away. I'm more fearful of that than I am of a child getting a concussion.
Despite the danger within the game, these parents believe football is here to stay.
It really is America's pastime. Kids who love football, and I don't think they're going to be able to take that away from fear. Not everybody's scared.
Ben Ebert, Annenberg Radio News.
That's it for today. We've had help from Kate Guarino and Abby Flaxer. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Rebecca Gibbon is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Logan Healy. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm David Hadari.